You're listening to the Isaka Podcast. In today's Security Series podcast, we're speaking with Frank Downs, Director and Subject Matter Expert of Isaka's Cybersecurity Practice, and Dustin Brewer, Manager and Cybersecurity Product Platform Developer. In this episode of the podcast, we're discussing the skills gap in cybersecurity. So to begin, can you tell us a little bit about what organizations are looking for when it comes to cybersecurity professionals?
As the two of you know, we currently have a State of Cybersecurity report that's coming out. Every year we do a State of Cybersecurity survey amongst all of our members, and we ask them a couple different questions. We change it up a little bit each year, so it's not too boring. But the big thing that is important is the consistency that we ask the similar questions each year, so we can see data trend changes and so forth. And one that we've consistently seen is this stubbornness of technical skills. I say stubbornness, but I feel like technical skills are kind of a requisite for this field. So maybe it's not stubbornness, it's probably a good thing. But the stubbornness in that it is still one of the biggest gaps in the field of cybersecurity. In fact, this year, what was uniquely interesting was now it seems to have created this kind of organic growth. So in years past, everyone would be asked, hey, what's the thing you think is needed most in this field? Like, what do you need most at your place of work? And people would say technical skills, technical skills, technical skills. And this year, it's made like an offspring, if you will, right, of technical skills with business acumen. So everyone still wants technical skills, but now you're seeing this rise as well. And, well, we want the business acumen with the technical skills, which is like saying, and especially right now with the way the field of cybersecurity is, first of all, if you can get someone with decent technical skills, congratulations, right? You've kind of captured a unicorn in this instance, because someone who's functional and technical and good at it, right? Those are really hard to get because the field is the state of what it is, right? It's hard to get experienced people who actually have the skill set and are capable of doing the job. Now you're saying we want people who are experienced, technical, capable, easy to work with, and are able to understand the business elements from top to bottom so that they can appropriately implement those technical skills into the business elements of the organization so that they can understand how it works into the greater picture. So you've now asking, it's kind of crazy, right? Because you've gone from, we want a unicorn, please, to now, we want a flying unicorn, please. It's interesting because you're seeing these trends and these traits change as such that they're becoming more and more, I guess, demanding. And as a result, we're also seeing these trends where there's less of an emphasis on traditional educational elements such as certifications in academia, etc., which was really interesting. Every year we see people say, well, you don't have to go to a good four-year school to come in here and play cybersecurity with us. I mean, we'd like it if you had it, but you don't need it. And then they would say, but you need these certifications and so forth, which makes sense, right? But what's interesting now is now you're even seeing people say, well, the certifications are still good, but, right? And it's not being replaced with a four-year school. They want that technical experience and so forth. So they want certifications, very specific certifications that can provide technical competence, because they're realizing that a lot of certifications in cybersecurity aren't actually giving that technical competence element. So you see people who are more interested, what's gaining prominence, for example, are certifications that give you that hands-on skills, hands-on technical elements. So we're just going to do a recap here, Safia, because it can be a bit intense, right? Because right now we're saying we want someone who has technical hands-on skills with certain certificates and certifications and a level of education of our determination that has business acumen capabilities so that that cybersecurity skill can appropriately be integrated into this field. And by the way, 5 to 10 years, please, which is a tall order, especially for individuals who are trying to break into this field. So you have this hierarchy of needs, and you're starting with technical on one element, technical business, right? Then technical business certification. And as you progress, you see these desires that they kind of want. But to get back to that point, though, getting a certification that actually has hands-on skill sets can be hard. Getting that hands-on training overall can be difficult. I'll give you an example. You may be surprised, some of you know this, I moonlight as a professor at University of Maryland, Baltimore County, right? So UMBC and every other school is currently trying to work to effectively integrate technical skill sets into their academic curriculum. So this is something that's kind of relatively recent, because Up until, I'd say, the last 3 years, cybersecurity has been taught primarily in the abstract, and at a lot of schools it still is. Instead of getting your hands dirty in a lab or something like that, they go over, you know, the CIA triad for the 100 millionth time, or they go over other elements such as, well, what is DES? What is Blowfish? Now, these are all important things to know, but understanding them in the abstract is completely different than getting your hands dirty with these types of concepts and things. And so as we're seeing this, we're seeing that this statistic of desired technical experience but educated in certain ways is not going away. And in fact, the gap is getting greater. More people are needed, right? Which makes sense with the way cybersecurity is expanding. There's not enough people in the field to actually meet the need. And the field itself is getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and there's just not enough flow of people into that field at the same time, let alone people with the right types of technical skill sets. So you're seeing what's interesting then from there is you're seeing that a lot of these certifications and training mechanisms, right, are turning more towards the technical elements. And you can see that here at Isaka, for example, with the CSXP certification. Dustin and I have worked on CSX for years at this point. And one of the things that I saw at Isaka that we really try to work on is if you're going to be working with cybersecurity, you're getting your hands dirty. And that's why we have all these different certifications and certificates that specifically do the technical training and so forth. We have coming out at the end of this month the Accelerated CSX Practitioner Suite, where individuals can actually sit down and within the span of 2 days, right, get immersed in this technical experience where they're doing all these different labs. And with the accelerated one, the goal was to make it as accessible as possible so you can take this anywhere. But you're immersed in these labs, and then you have this certification skills assessment at the end. And if you pass that, then it's just a matter of filling out the application, which pops up right after it. And then you can get your CSXP certification within a short amount of time, depending on your capabilities. And through a highly technical assessment, right? Because this assessment is, we put you in a live environment. Can you do X, Y, Z? Show it. That's what I think we have here, and that's what you're starting to see emerge across the field, right? It's people being put in these technical environments and having to prove their capabilities and prove their skill sets, because it's something that's really required. What do you think, Dustin?
First off, it's really important to kind of break down, okay, people in the survey are saying, we need more technical people. Okay, fair enough, but there are so many facets to cybersecurity. So many different job roles. Are you talking about technical abilities with forensics? Are you talking about technical abilities with IDS? Are you talking about technical abilities with audit? And the answer is yes, right? Yes, we're talking about technical abilities and all those things. One of the great things about what we do, especially with CSXP, is we throw you into all those things. We're like, yep, here you go. Here is a mile wide and an inch deep of cybersecurity, but you are doing it technical. You're actually practicing it within a live environment. And there are other certification bodies out there that do things that are very similar. One of the main ones that comes to mind right now is OSCP with offensive security. If you plan to be a pen tester, or if you want to be a pen tester, you know, you want a foot in the door, that's one of the best certifications you can get because they throw you into a live environment. They say, okay, hack. And if you're like, well, how do I hack? Then the usual answer is try harder, right? just keep trying.
Right. That's it. That's literally like if you ask for help, that's their response. Try harder.
And
which
I love it.
A bad response, by the way.
Yeah. No, I love it. I think it's a great response. I think a lot of us are trained by this kind of idea of what academia is and how we should learn and how we should be trained, right? So, of course, you know, you read the book and you take the test, and you read the book and you take the, or you read the chapter and you take the quiz, or, you know, there's just this traditional way that we're all trained to be trained, right? So with something like this, with hands-on, it's somewhat of a trial by fire, right? Except for you're in a safe environment. You're in a virtual lab. So we throw you into a virtual lab, somewhat trial by fire, right? There's an attack happening on this network, but if you mess up, it's okay because you just reboot the lab. It really does prepare you for the real world situations that you might find yourself in.
And so are enterprises doing a good job of finding people with this hands-on experience? And what are the implications of the way that they are finding cyber professionals?
It's interesting because you're almost seeing like these levels of acceptance, right? If you're a hiring organization, you're a hiring body. First and foremost, yeah, you want that technical person with that proven hands-on experience. And there's the reason that saying is like an age-old adage, right? There's no substitute for experience because it's true. There really is no substitute for experience, right? Now, in lieu of experience, people will take those, what you'll see is organizations will take people who are technically inclined or, you know, I don't want to use the phrase good enough, but that might be the closest thing that we can use, right? It's like any other job work role, right? You'll see people, you'll see these job things on Monster.com and whatnot, and must have 10 years experience in the field of social media or something, or 20 years in social media. And it's like, well, it's not been, social media hasn't been around for 20 years, right? So stuff like that. So they start with wanting to get the experienced people with the technical hands-on skills. They'll take people then who are technically inclined and maybe something they can build up. So it's not necessarily an utter requirement. I mean, you can get a job at this and not have the experience. Be careful, right? Make sure you're in an environment that encourages a learning experience and OJT on-the-job training. But for the most part, that's what people are looking for, and that's where the greatest gap is. But the need is so great that you're seeing organizations say, well, okay, if I can't get X, I might as well go for Y. If I can't get chocolate, I guess I'll use Nutella, which some people like Nutella more, but you get what I'm trying to say here.
You know, one of the things that I definitely see, just totally anecdotally, you know, when we go to our conferences, our CSX conferences, when we go to our ISACA conferences, and even when we go to, you know, external conferences with Black Hat or InfoSec, talking to employers and talking to people, you know, a lot of employers now are setting a standard and they're saying, okay, you know what? If you're an English major, we don't care. If you want to learn cybersecurity, come on board. We'll teach you cybersecurity. You know, but you got to want to learn. And that's another thing about, you know, cybersecurity in general too, is you're constantly, things are constantly changing. You're constantly learning. You're never done.
And so for somebody who is hired for a cyber role or is looking to get into cybersecurity, how can they get started?
First and foremost, ISACA has a great deal of utilities that you could leverage in order to become more technically proficient or learn more about cybersecurity. There's a lot of different fields out there, right? A lot of different opportunities and a lot of different places to go. Like I said, personally, I like to think that here at ISACA, our CSX options are really appealing. You get the live labs and you actually work in these labs and do hands-on training and hands-on engagements to show that you can actually prove this. I'll give you a perfect example. This is actually from last semester. One of my grad students took one of our courses, and as you probably know, whenever you finish our labs, you don't just get a readout telling you what you did right, what you did wrong, and how good you are at certain capabilities and CPEs. You now get a readout that has all that information at the end of each lab, but also tells you what work roles by NIST 800-181 definitions you're working towards being qualified for. So she took all the things that she did in these labs, for example, did static analysis of malware and all that stuff, and was able to put it on her resume because these are real things that she did, and aligned them to NIST 800-181 and 800 work roles and the NIST CSF. She went into that interview and got a job at a federal government agency here in DC, and they said, this is great. Not only do you have understanding of the technical elements that we need you to understand here, but you also are tying this to the important policies as well. And she was a math major who was in this grad program, so she had no real cyber background, but she was able to get that not just technical hands-on experience, but also able to articulate how it works to job roles and how it works to how she will work in the field. So, and that's not just in our CSXP certification suite, that accelerated program I was discussing. That's in all of our stuff on CSX as well. So that's where I would recommend you start. But there's also other certification bodies out there and training organizations as well. Dustin, any recommendations?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. If it's something that you're interested in, start doing research. Start looking into it. It's just like getting into anything else. If you have an interest in programming, what do? You pick up a programming book, right? If you have an interest in cybersecurity, it's the same thing. There are definitely, you know, certification bodies out there that can prove that you know this, but to actually get started in it, obviously you want to do some research and try to find out what training program best fits your knowledge level and your how you learn. So if it is hands-on training, obviously you do need that eventually, but let's say that you're more of a theory person, you know, hey, I need to read a book, I need to have something in my head as far as the theory goes before I can jump into doing something hands-on. That's totally understandable and totally fine, but, you know, find the right path for you. As far as suggestions go, again, I'm a little partial to ISACA's training, but just like Frank, but there are some really good other vendor training.
And so it seems like year after year, we discuss the lack of qualified cybersecurity professionals and the impact it has on organizations. But let's switch gears a little bit and talk about the qualified job seeker. So someone who's incredibly qualified in cybersecurity today may not necessarily be in a few years if they don't keep their skills up. So can you tell us a little bit about how job seekers can leverage the skills gap and still make sure they find a place that supports training and keeps their skills relevant?
So it depends on what their goals are, honestly. So if you're talking about people who are more experienced and trained and are coming up on the middle point of their career, they have to kind of decide, do they want to still stay technical or do they want to get into that managerial role? And in that kind of case, you've got SISM, for example, here at Isaka that can help you become an information system manager and understand the elements therein. And also, though, you're in the position, especially if you are in the position where you're managing people, you can help make them more technical, share the knowledge. And you make a very valid point, by the way, when you say just because someone's technical and competent and has that sharpened, honed edge now doesn't mean they will later. Because in this field, weird stuff is happening literally all the time. Just yesterday, there was a huge exploit that was written up about Docker that impacts like everything that has Docker and can give direct administrative access to people who leverage this vulnerability to exploit this vulnerability to the systems that those Docker builds are on. It's stuff like that that can come out of the blue that if you're not keeping an eye on things and if you're not trying to stay relevant down the line, that's going to be a serious problem, especially no matter if you're technical or if you're a manager. If, for example, an exploit like that happens on a big cloud provider, it doesn't matter if you're the CIO, the CISO, or the person at the help desk and so forth. Everyone's in trouble, right? Because of the overwhelming impact that could have. What do you think, Dustin?
Yeah, absolutely. There is this versatility in cybersecurity that you have to have as far as technical capabilities go. However, you're going to find that in your career path, you're going to say, you know what, I really enjoy doing malware analysis. You know, you kind of become at that point somewhat of a jack of all trades and a master of one. Because you need to know that today, here's how malware works. Tomorrow, and I do mean actually tomorrow, it might change. There might be a new piece of malware out there that all of a sudden does something that has to do with networks. And then you need to jump into network forensics, right? So you have to have, you know, even in these little facets that we have within cybersecurity, if you become an expert in that, you still kind of have to have this overall knowledge. And to get trained up on that, again, it's staying current. It's something that's never going to stop evolving. I like to compare it to being a doctor, a medical doctor. I'm not a medical doctor, so I really don't know what that's like. But I like to think that, you know, a doctor that I go to is looking up, reading journals, reading scientific articles on new things, new drugs, new types of viruses, so that they can identify them in the field. It's something similar to that.
Another example that's more specific to our field. Dustin, when's the last time you or anyone you know coded in COBOL? Right?
I don't think I've ever coded in COBOL, but yeah, okay.
Yeah, point right. taken. And this was about even 5 years ago. This is still a relevant example. One of my coworkers was complaining that her brother-in-law couldn't find a job because, you know, he'd been a COBOL programmer for 20 years. And then, you know, surprise, surprise, they upgraded and it didn't need COBOL anymore. And he was having a hard time looking for a job because, you know, his only skill was I can code in COBOL. So without that diversification or learning other skill sets or other languages, he was kind of in a bit of a pickle because he just wasn't there yet. It was an atrophy kind of situation.
And so what all do you two do to make sure you're up on your cybersecurity skills?
One of the things we benefit from here is that we work with a lot of different organizations and across the world. So we can get keen insight into what the weird problems are that they're having when they have those weird problems. And we take that information and we build training out of it. And that's how we provide relevant training for individuals in the field. We had one organization that had an actual website defacement. And they actually, the attackers made it worse by changing the IP address on the DMZ of that system. So it's not just, hey, our website's defaced, people can see it and it looks bad. It's also, where's the website? And that becomes an issue. And then we build labs out of that training and so forth, showing people how to identify where lost assets can be and how they can use different network scanners and stuff like that. So we kind of, Dustin and I really much benefit in that way. And then we also naturally take different trainings and certifications that we're required to. And that's something that other people can do as well, including taking that training, for example, that I just referenced. What am I missing there, Dustin?
The community. Community, as far as cyber goes, as far as audit, IT audit, as far as just IT in general, we've gotten much more open about cyber attacks. We can't always be 100% open, like we saw with Facebook. They had the three different exploits that happened, and they haven't been able to release what exploits they were or how they did it yet, because they still are doing their investigation, and that's fine. You know, that's totally understandable. But they said, hey, you know, we were hacked, and here's how it happened. But relying upon each other to find out what new techniques hackers are using and attackers are using. Attending conferences, huge. That's huge. I know that they're expensive. I know that a lot of people consider them boondoggles, and you know, but if you actually go and you actually attend the talks and you actually do some of the neat capture the flag events and hands-on events that happen, you will learn. You'll learn a lot of different techniques for not only how hackers are attacking networks, but also how to defend your networks against those attacks. I'm a humongous nerd. And every time I go to a conference and I hear about a new thing, I've got to go home and try it out for myself, whether that includes building a virtual lab with a particular version of a Windows server, whether that includes buying a particular device and then trying to hack the firmware on it via JTAG or via near field communication. I have a huge workbench in my office that, you know, I can actually work on this stuff. And obviously, you know, on the virtual side of the house, you know, I have virtualizations with VirtualBox is free, right? You can download that and you can usually get any version of Windows you want off of Microsoft's website for 180 days for free, right? So, you know, trying these things out, getting hands-on experience, testing it out in a laboratory environment, going to conferences, meeting peers, talking to your peers, actually attending the workshops and attending the different talks that happen at conferences. It's huge. I mean, it's just, and just relying on the community. And again, the community is getting so good about being open about, hey, we were attacked last month. Here's how they did it. And then great. Once that person knows, hopefully they'll take it into account and they'll say, okay, here's what we need to do to beef up our security so that this doesn't happen to us.
Thanks, Frank and Dustin. And that's all we have time for in this episode of the podcast. But if you're interested in listening to Frank Downs and Dustin Brewer every month, be sure to subscribe to the Isoca podcast.